Will you pray with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. There's a fairly famous satirical online comic you may have seen entitled Duty Calls. It's a single panel. A stick figure is sitting by himself at a desk in front of a computer, banging away at the keyboard. A voice from beyond the frame calls out to him, "Are you coming to bed?" And the stick figure answers, "I can't. This is important." And the voice calls back, "What?" And the stick figure responds, "Someone is wrong on the internet." A second punchline appears underneath the drawing. "What do you want me to do? Leave? Then they'll keep being wrong." It does sometimes feel like our duty to keep people from being wrong. Whether we think the other person is wrong about abortion or critical race theory or cheering for Ohio State, it can be hard to resist the urge to try to argue them into our point of view, which is to say, the right point of view. And, of course, they're on the other side of the screen, equally convinced that they have to argue us into their viewpoint. It's an argument that none of us can ever seem to win. We stay entrenched in our own sides, and we know our side is right. We love to be right. It feels so good to be right. It feels superior. And it also feels good to have that sense of moral outrage we get when other people are just so wrong, especially about really important things. Our sense of moral outrage, of righteous indignation, is not good for civil discourse, but it feels good, and it is good for the media, for the politicians, for anyone who benefits financially or otherwise from people just burrowing in to their solid points of view. And it feels good to be angry. It can feel powerful when we feel powerless. It can feel energizing and motivating and almost addictive. In fact, several years back, researchers at Emory did a functional brain MRI study in which they found that when a subject's political views were validated, they experienced a dopamine hit in the part of the brain associated with addiction. That sweet reward center. The really fascinating part of seeing this was the fact that the hit that the subjects received of dopamine in that center that is associated with addiction, the hit was of the same magnitude as a hit someone addicted to cocaine or heroin would experience. It's a kind of addiction, or at least our brains feel it that way, to stay angry, to be outraged, and then to feel validated or vindicated in our points of view, in our own rightness. This cycle of outrage, of getting angry that other people are wrong and feeling superior and validated or vindicated in our own views, this outrage cycle, of course, depends on other people being wrong, doing wrong, especially thinking wrong, which is funny because none of us are ever wrong. It's always other people. The whole thing would collapse if we could ever let go or loosen our grip, our absolute commitment to the idea that truth is always a binary of right and wrong. That we are good, and the people who are wrong are bad. Unfortunately, this morning, we hear a story from the gospel that seems to support the whole idea of people being right and wrong in absolute terms. We could even call this story the Right and Wrong Sisters. It's the story of Mary and Martha, and if you're familiar with it, as soon as you hear their names, you already know who's right and who's wrong, which means you already know whose side you're supposed to be on and who you're supposed to emulate. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He stops in a village where a woman named Martha welcomes him and his friends into her home. Now, Luke does not tell us whether she's expecting all these people or not. It's not the kind of detail that would matter very much to a gospel writer, but it might matter a great deal to whomever had to do the actual work of hosting. And in case you don't know who that would be, it was women. Women did the actual work of hosting. It might matter to them to be prepared or not for a group of people in their home. But whether or not the visit was planned or impromptu, Jesus has honored Martha by coming to her home. And now she sets to doing what a hostess must do. Without a stove, an oven, a microwave, a dishwasher, she prepares to feed her guests. And while the eldest female in the household had special responsibility for hosting, it was expected that all adult women in the home would share in this burden. I'm pretty sure that adult women guests would help out too. If there were any in this group, they were not in the kitchen. But Mary should have been. At least according to cultural norms and expectations of that time. But Mary chooses to do the unexpected. She does what would be considered wrong, even scandalous for a woman in her day. She sits down at the feet of Jesus, just like a disciple would, just like a man would, and she listens to him. She listens to his teaching. She takes on a role that belonged exclusively to men at that time. Sitting at the feet of a teacher was no place for a woman, and Mary knows that as well as Martha does. She's acting like a man. She's acting like a man by sitting and listening and trying to learn, and she's acting like a man by leaving all the work to a woman. Luke doesn't tell us how long this went on before Martha could not take it anymore. But it finally gets to a point where Martha can no longer keep her indignation to herself. But it's not her sister that she aims it at. She doesn't say a word to Mary. Instead, she marches out of the kitchen and reprimands Jesus. "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Martha puts Jesus in the role of parent. But Jesus gets the role wrong. It seems like everybody's doing something wrong in this story. Here's a sibling conflict. Here's Jesus put in the role of parent and referee. And he does the one thing a parent really shouldn't do in the midst of a sibling conflict. He takes a side. He takes a side and tells the hostess, the head of this house, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, but there is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." So in the story of the right and wrong sisters, we see that one sister, Mary, is doing what is wrong in her time and place, while Martha is doing everything right. And then Jesus seems to flip it so thoroughly that ever since then, we've known it's Mary who is right, and Martha, poor Martha, is very, very wrong. Jesus has taken a side. The traditional sphere of men, listening, learning, is better. That's the better part than the traditional sphere of women, the kitchen, the women's work. Focusing on what nourishes the spiritual life is better than focusing on the menial tasks that sustain physical life. The spiritual is better than the physical. Contemplation is better than action. Mary, better than Martha. She's right. Martha's wrong. But is she? Are those the only options? You're right, I'm wrong. She's right, she's wrong. Martha gets criticized for her busyness, as if the hidden work of hosting would somehow have taken care of itself if she had joined Mary on the floor at the feet of Jesus. Martha is not doing something wrong by serving rather than sitting and listening. Martha wasn't doing anything wrong by doing the necessary work of hosting a guest. In fact, she was offering Jesus the highest honor, the honor of being welcomed in her home. She's offering the gift of hospitality. The problem was not Martha's busyness. It wasn't that she was working when she should not have been. The problem, it seems, was her focus. Luke tells us that she was distracted by her many tasks, and that distraction seems to slip into frustration, and that frustration seems to flip over to outrage. And in that indignation, she dishonors her guest. To offer hospitality is to make a guest feel welcomed, cherished, honored, loved. Imagine now a hostess who comes flying out of the kitchen to complain to the guest that her little sister is not doing her share of the work. How does the guest now feel welcomed and honored? How can a complaint like that do anything other than make the guest feel like a burden? Martha's work was intended to serve him and to honor him. But her words show where her heart is and where her mind has been. She's distracted. She's frustrated. She's resentful. She wants Jesus to validate her indignation. She knows Mary is wrong. She needs Jesus to say it. Martha, Martha. Jesus gently responds, "You are worried and distracted by many things. And I hear not judgment in his words, but understanding, sympathy, concern, the kinds of things we don't usually lean into when we feel like someone's wrong." It may sound like Jesus is taking Mary's side, but I think he's taking Martha's side too. Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. Could he be saying the same to us? God knows we are worried and distracted. God knows there are plenty of reasons to be worried and distracted. There are, in fact, plenty of reasons to be angry, to feel enraged. And thanks to our amazing communications technology, we know more of those reasons to be angry and worried and distracted than any humans have ever known before. There's no end to the amount of things to worry about, to be angry about, to be right about. The human mind and the human spirit were not built for this. We were not built for the 24/7 exposure to catastrophe and chaos that the media and social media offer us. We were not built for so much outrage and so much despair. We were built for contemplation and action. We were built for empathy and hope. We were built for listening and serving. Martha did not have a smartphone or a laptop. She was not assaulted by the 24/7 news cycle. But she knew what it was like to be restless and worried and distracted. She knows what it's like not to be able to be fully in the one present moment, fully in the kitchen, pouring her love into a big batch of soup, or setting the table with anticipation and care, excitement to honor and love her guests. She is physically in the kitchen, but mentally, she's elsewhere, maybe everywhere else, just like us, worrying about what needs to be done and what isn't getting done and what might happen and what needs to happen, resentful of how much has fallen on her and how no one else cares as much as she does. She is right, and they are wrong. And she is stuck in the kitchen in her resentment. Her body is there, but her mind is out there in the living room on what Martha is doing and how wrong she is for it, and how wrong Jesus is for letting it happen. She cooks and stirs her righteous indignation until, of course, it boils right over. Meanwhile, Mary is only in one place. Maybe only for a little bit, but she's in one place, and she is there fully. And Jesus says to Martha, there is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. And the one thing that Mary has chosen is to give her total attention. To give her total attention to her honored guest. It's an intentional choice to be fully present and unworried for a bit, at least, and to be undistracted for a bit, at least, to focus on the one person who's in front of her right then. And having made this choice to give her total inner attention to Jesus, this cannot be taken from her, no matter what she does now. Maybe she'll get up now and go to the kitchen and help with the meal. Who knows? But her sense of inner listening, her inner union with God, it will not be taken. It can remain. God is in all of it. The cutting of the vegetables, the scrubbing of the pots, all the other tasks involved in being a physical person. In the physical world, doing the things that need to be done, taking the action that must be taken, serving with love, offering kindness and respect. God is in all of it, and nothing can take that from anyone if we only pay attention. If we only keep that space inside of us to listen, to be open, to be curious, to learn, to be empathetic, to consider the dignity of anyone and everyone, even if we think they're wrong. It's so hard. It is so hard to pay attention in a world like ours. It is so hard to keep that space. It is so hard to listen for God once we realize it means we have to try to listen to other people, even when we're so sure they're wrong. It is hard to listen deeply. It is harder still to try to understand. It's especially hard to try to empathize with people we feel have no empathy. It is hard to listen, to pay attention, to understand, to empathize. It's easier. It is so much easier to just be outraged. And it feels good for a while. But, oh, friend, friend, you and I are worried and distracted by many things. And there is need of only one thing. Every day, Christ comes to us as our guest.